David, you take care of yourself. David Jacobs, back with you next Sunday at 11 o'clock. Well, I'm so excited. Adam Ant is here, sat outside the studio, and we have a new album from him. Adam Ant is the blue-black hussar in Marrying the Gunner's Daughter, and he's doing a spoken word session as well. Well, I'm delighted to say that Adam Ant is here. Welcome, good to see you.
Thanks very much, nice to be here.
I saw you on stage in the summer in the sweltering heat. Oh. I was filming at Henley for Vintage, doing Rewind, and there you were, working your socks off, doing a magnificent set.
Oh, thank you, yeah, very, very hot.
It was incredibly hot.
A quick half an hour.
And congratulations on this album. Adam Ant is the blue-black hussar in Marrying the Gunner's Daughter.
Yeah, it's a very long title. Yeah.
And I know what Marrying the Gunner's Daughter is, because it's flogging, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a naval term. Mm. Yeah, it was, I suppose it's a bit of a Sergio Leone. It's supposed to be like a sort of spaghetti western style title.
Right, okay.
And the Blue Black Hussar being the revisit of the character in 1980. What would he look like, perhaps, if he'd walked to Moscow with Napoleon's hussars and come back. So it was a kind of, you know, look back and put it into a kind of long title. People don't forget it, even if they hate it.
I have to say, though, it's a cracking album.
Thank you.
I absolutely loved it. Because, of course, I didn't know what to expect. Mm. And, I mean, you know, it's your... is it the sixth solo album, I think it must be, from you, mustn't it?
Believe so.
I think so. Anyway, so I thought, you know, just what is it going to be like? Because it's been quite some time, and I love it.
Thank you.
Because you don't know what to expect. Each track, excuse me, can be quite different, can't it?
Yeah. Well, I it's always a bit of a risk to sort of be eclectic with the songs, and I always thought of it. The songs came first, and I worried about the kind of piecing together later. Mm. And working with, you know, Boz Bora, and, you know, he's a good mate of mine, he's so musical anyway. I just sort of... Then I thought of sort of four sides. I always thought of it as a double album, double vinyl, which it is. I've done a double vinyl, so it's...
See, I've only got... Baby. I've got it like this.
Yeah, but it's...
When I saw it, I thought, good grief, how many tracks are on there?
Yeah, there's a lot on there. So it kind of had a life of its own, so it kind of... You know, it sort of pieced itself together, and I never really thought of any particular song, because the temptation is when you do an album, you go in with a producer, and you tend to come out with a sound for that album. Say over 12 songs, you get all the song ideas sort of blend into a kind of production sound. Mm. I think when you've had the advantage of having the time to...
Excuse me.
Is that your... It's not your mobile, is it?
I must apologise. Yes, carry on.
That was not me. when you've had the advantage of... You know, writing the songs over a period of time, it doesn't really matter if the styles are different. And then you produce them with different people, and so you get a different flavour with each song.
Well, of course, I mean, Who's a Goofy Bunny? That's old, isn't it?
Yeah, that's an old one. That was about sort of Malcolm.
Yeah.
And
that's Malcolm McLaren.
Malcolm McLaren.
Sadly passed on.
And when Malcolm passed, you know, I was very devastated, really. And I'm good friends with his son, Joe, and Ben. Mm. It was a nice little dedication to kind of update it and record it.
Oh, and you're also, there's a Vivian Westwood tribute there, isn't there? Yes. And, and of course, a Vince Taylor, who, he was with the Playboys, wasn't he?
Yeah. There's a mystery about Vince Taylor. I think he was English, but he lived in America, and then he became a massive star in France.
He did, didn't he? Mm. Was that about the same time as Johnny Hallyday?
Johnny, yeah, the great Johnny. And he is amazing. It's amazing how people have said they've never... You know, they hadn't come across Vince Taylor, and then through the song, they've kind of Googled him and had a look, and they're knocked out by what they see. He really, he looks fantastic, and the way he moves. Mm. And the story behind that was the a girlfriend of mine in way back in the punk days gave me this really beaten up old gold chain that I used to wear around my wrist and on stage. And I remember asking her about it and said, where she got it from? She said, oh, it's my boyfriend Vince gave it to me. And I just twigged it. It was him, you know. It was the great Vince Taylor. So I had his chain. So again, I put that in the song.
It's a cracking song. Thank you. Let's listen to it.
know we never look back. The whole world was his stage. He never acted his age. A girl we called French Valerie gave a gold peg chain to me. Asked her who had given it her. An old flame called Vince Taylor. Oh. Oh, Johnny looked back and never looked back. The damn fine, never see his like again. Must have left his mark on me, even like by Morrissey. Uh-oh.
Great stuff. I love that track. Vince Taylor, and it's from Adamant is the Blue Black Hussar in Marrying the Gunner's Daughter. Adamant's new album, which came out last Monday. To Adamant, good to have you back, says JCT. Hope you're well. Please tell the god that is Adamant that I saw him in Ipswich last year. He was excellent, back stronger and better than ever. I'm so glad he's feeling so well in himself. Love him, Liz in Felixstowe. And a big thank you to Adam for taking time to sign and pose for a pic at the BBC in Manchester two Fridays ago. Love the new album. Nigel from Bradford. And No Snow in the Cotswolds, and a spoken word with Adamant. Yippee. Paul Sergeant Milko, and he says, well, lots of other stuff as well. Yes, and working with Boz, because we associate Boz, I mean, he does his own great stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And he also works and co-writes, of course, with Morrissey.
With Moz, yeah.
So does he have a different kind of thing going on with you?
Yeah. I mean, Boz is a Boz is one of the most talented musicians
incredibly
I've ever worked
gifted.
With. You know, he's so natural. You know, working with him is quite effortless. Like, he'll do a guitar track in one take. You know, there's no messing about. And he plays clarinet. He's a brilliant arranger. But above all, he's really funny as well. He's got a great sense of humour, which you know, I don't know if it comes across, but he's just. I've been on tour with him as well. He's great. He's just lovely to have around, and he's a natural musician. It just flows out of him. So, you know, writing with him comes up with a backing track, and it's quite easy to put a top line and lyric to it.
And we were talking actually when I was playing the Bowie record earlier, we were talking about Tony Visconti, and you actually worked with him, didn't you?
Yeah, Tony Visconti, you know, is one of the great producers of all time, modern times, made some fabulous records, and I worked with him on Viva La Rock and Apollo 9.
Mm.
And he's a very disciplined guy, you know. You go in there, if you're late, you know, he gives a ticking off one morning, which is quite deserved, because a couple of them turned up late, and he said, you know, come on, guys, you know. And I learned a lot from working with him, because, you know, you get the best out of yourself, I find, if you go in at sort of early and finish at a certain time and then knock off and go home. And that's something that's pretty much... stayed with me. I've learned from that. You know, I go in the studio, I like to go in, you know, early, 11 o'clock or something, work till 7 and go home.
Because most people assume that people are doing it in the middle of the night.
Absolutely, yeah. And that came from working with him, was, you know, very clear. Mm. You know, and it's a real discipline with him. That's it. There's a knockoff. There's an end point. And then you go home and you listen to it, and the next day you come in fresh. And you've had the time to say, well, you know, we can tweak that a bit.
Yeah.
But I think this the old school idea of going in at, you know, like you end up like a vampire going
exactly.
in at midnight, very little gets done, you know.
Yeah.
So he and I think he's done a fabulous job with you know obviously Bowie and Mark Bolan, but above all he can take this craft and this skill to any artist, and he really gets the best out of you, you know.
I was in Dean Street Studios last week judging the MPG Awards, the Music Producers Guild Awards, and there's a magnificent photograph of him on the wall, you know, looking about 18.
Yeah.
Older than that. But him and Bowie and various other people, and you just think, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he played bass for Bowie in the very early days. He's a very skillful bass player too, but you learn a lot. I wish, you know, there were more people like that in the music business that you can learn that much from in a short period of time.
You must have been friends with Polystyrene.
Oh yeah, I love Polly. Polly was I met her in the King's Road. She had this place in Beaufort Market, it was called, right on the corner. I think there's a pub there now, but it was just before Seditionaries.
Yeah,
I used to go to Seditionaries, and there was this sort of ground level shopping thing where everyone had their, you know, little stalls, and she had her stall, and it was all kind of quite day glow, and she'd sort of be wearing this sort of 50s outfit, but she somehow made it very punky. And we shared a manager with the late Falcon Stewart, who was her manager also. So they were the first ones to, well, even listen to early Adam and the Ants, which not many people enjoyed doing, but she was very, very, very nice lady. And a unique, really, and I think sometimes gets overlooked somewhat in the kind of history of punk rock. And their songs were very commercial and you know, really, really punky pop. They were very cleverly arranged, and the saxophone element in it. But she had this amazing voice and the attitude, and she just smiled away there. She was great. So.
Well, should we play Germ-Free Adolescence?
Yeah, Germ-Free Adolescence.
Like
done for you, Adolescence from X-Ray Specs. And Adam and I have actually spoken in depth before, so we're not touching on any of the old, you know, ground. The interesting story, because you're actually playing, you've got a pile of dates coming up. You're doing Douglas on the 19th of April, King's Lynn on the 21st, Bath on the 23rd, Leicester 24th, Barnstable 26th, Truro 27th, Poole 28th, Jersey on the 30th. On the 1st of May, you'll be in Guernsey, and then the Roundhouse, and it's exactly 35 years.
To supporting X-Ray Specs at the Roundhouse. And I remember it distinctly because it was, you know, mixed feelings, really. I mean, we played, and then I remember Polly went on, and it was just, I've never seen so much spit in my life. They just, it was awful. They spat, it was terrible. But she soldiered on and did it. But she had a great, courageous lady. But that was one of the worst things about punk. The idea of spitting at people was terrible. But she was great. But it's 35 years, so I'll be thinking of her that night. That'll be a nice time to go back.
And that's the one and only time you played the Roundhouse.
Yeah. Well, that's the only time I ever played the Roundhouse, and then because it was in a bit of a shambles then, and then it went through all different kinds of changes, and now they've kind of made it into a venue again. So
and
I'll
it's
be
beautiful.
There, yeah.
It looks really good, and they've got different rooms, you know, to cater for different size audiences, and a nice bar and a terrace and all that, you know. Yes, it's very chic. We were talking about art school as well, and it's interesting how many musicians come out of art school. You yourself went to art school, didn't you? What kind of art were you doing?
I did graphic design.
Yeah.
And I went to Hornsey College of Art, is now Middlesex University. But Vivian Albertine of the Slits was in the year above. And Ray Davis was like their most famous sort of rocker. He'd been there. But I'd sort of sum it up that really, that, you know, in those days you had the luxury of having a grant. So that was the only place you could get subsidised to start a rock and roll band. And you had a built-in audience because they'd have dances every week. So eventually you'd con the, you know, the guy... I think how the guy that used to choose the bands was Graham out of Wire.
No.
Yeah, he was the entertainment officer. Groovy Graham, we used to call him. And so he used to book the bands. We'd get Kilburn and the High Roads.
Yeah.
And Ducks Deluxe. And, you know, we kind of Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah.
And people like that. And eventually I did a gig there with the Ants. It lasted about 3 minutes.
Gosh.
But I got a gig there in the end. But, it's you know, Paul Simon and The Clash. He went to art school.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of... I suppose, you know, it leads into it. I suppose it's, you know, I have an artistic temperament, but it helped me because doing graphics, I was trained to do typography, so I could do the sort of design for the posters and the record covers and eventually videos, which I had no idea when I was doing a film school, a film course, that I'd be able to use it later on.
Of course. Mm. And Viv Albertine, you mentioned, I'm working with her and Lena Lovitch on Tuesday, actually.
Oh, she's great. Give her my love.
I will do. Mary Jane Ansell is a magnificent artist. Mm-hmm. And, of course, bearing in mind your background in art, and you've got, there's a girl in a cocked hat at 1 and 2 on the album.
Yeah.
And her work is just brilliant. I mean, I actually thought they were photographs.
Yeah, I think she's won the BP Portrait Prize. I just loved it, and it was so nice to get a young British artist on a record cover. You know, it seems to me to be quite a rare thing these days. And I saw the picture, and I just thought that's the Gunner's daughter right there.
Did you see it at the National?
No, I saw it in a window. It was being sold. It was her first show. It apparently it had only been in the window for about a few hours, and I sort of walked past and saw it, and I thought, that's the record cover, and I went in and got it. So, and then I bought a couple of others from her.
She must have been thrilled to bits.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, she came up with her husband, I think, and they came and had a look, and I said, I want to use this for the record cover, and said, oh yeah, great, very positive. And the girl is called Georgina, young lady model, and I got her in my video, so it all sort of tied,
all linked.
So I got her in the video in the end. So it's just very nice to have you know, to have a young British artist on a record cover.
But as I said, you know, you've instigated it. It made me go, well, who is she? I'm really curious to find out who this woman is. So I was poring over website and various other stuff for about an hour, thinking, right, I've got to go and see this woman, you know, exhibit. She's absolutely brilliant. Now, New York Dolls. So there's a link again, isn't there? Because Morrissey was the president of the New York Dolls fan club, and you're working with Boz, and you're a New York Dolls fan.
Yeah, I first bumped into... Well, I didn't bump into them. My first encounter with them was... obviously, the album cover was just so unusual. Yeah. These guys dressed like that. I couldn't believe it. It's sort of this glam had gone completely crazy. I went to see Rod Stewart at Wembley, Empire Pool Wembley, and they were the support band.
What year was that?
Oh, this has got to be in the early 70s at some point.
When he was really, really good.
I'll tell you what, it was with the Faces.
Yeah.
It was the Faces. It wasn't, he hadn't gone solo, so he was with the Faces. And the Dolls came on, and I've never seen such a... the place emptied. Everybody sort of... It just went out of the room when they played, because they were so sort of out there. I mean, they were... Arthur had a pair of thigh-length pink... boots on and sort of leaning up against the back, and Johansson had a top hat on and black tights, and they were just and Thunders just this mop of hair, and they were extraordinary, and I just couldn't take my eyes off them. So that was, I had the advantage of actually seeing them live, which was an experience. And I mean, they did a really long version of Personality Crisis.
So I
sort of picked it up from there. But they've always been they've always been one of my favourite bands of all time.
Well, this isn't the long version. This is 3 minutes and 41 seconds of Personality Crisis, New York Dolls. New York Dolls, A Personality Crisis, as chosen by Adam Ant. And tuning in from Detroit is BB, loving Adam. So, if you can just explain to me, the good, the mad, and the ugly posse.
Lovely.
Sorry. Yes, the good, the mad, and the lovely posse.
Yeah.
That's still going, isn't it? That's all still happening.
Yeah, that's my band.
So they will do the Adam Ant solo.
Oh yeah. They'll play a couple of them. Tom and Andy played on Call Zombie on the album.
Yeah.
So it was just that I'd recorded all the stuff before I put this band together, because the album, the band took quite a long time to sort of form, but I put all their names down on the album anyway, just so people know who they are and what's going on. But I love playing with them. They're a great band, very supportive, and they sing, which is great.
And do you love touring?
Yeah, I've been touring non-stop, really.
I
made that conscious decision to get out there and play the catalogue and drop in just one or two new ones. Mm. But then you sort of know where you stand, you know, I think that's, you know, where I started, that's what I like to do, genuinely like to play live. And you get an idea of where the audience is, and you, rather than just bring out the new album and then tour. So, you know, I've done the touring USA, two tours of Britain and Holland, Australia.
And having seen you twice in as many years, you have not lost any energy whatsoever, have you?
I think a lot of that comes from, you know, looking back on the catalogue, and I'm really enjoying myself, number one. I'm choosing the tracks out of the whole repertoire that I love singing, and having a good band that are very supportive and also help out with the vocals, because the Adam and the Ants sound was so vocal. There were loads of overdubs on the record. So they, you know, four of them sing, which makes my job easier, just to go in there and just sing the lead. So it's just generally nice, and I think when you've been away from something that long, you appreciate being able to do it more.
And when you visit the States, do you ever think, oh, I would like to go back and live there or not?
Well, I lived in the USA. It's great. I mean, you can never say never, but I went over there as an actor. I went over there to learn to an acting school there and did some movies and TV and stuff. So it was the right place, but I've also lived in Tennessee, which was the last place I ever thought I'd imagine living, and I had a fabulous couple of years living there, and that's what the song Call Zombie's about.
Yeah.
So it's a very different audience, a very unique audience, as is the British audience, but very supportive, and we just did 22 shows over there last year, and it was great, and I had to go back and
do
22
more. Well, they love you over there, don't they?
I had to go back and play, but I think the attitude that I have is, it doesn't matter where I play or who I play to, for me it's the same show. So the fact they appreciate it is lovely, having had many shows in my early career where they perhaps didn't. But you know, you do what you can, but they have a personality, the British have a personality, the French, whatever, but the USA is a big challenge because it's so vast.
And would you act again?
If it was something, if it was a good story and it was something that fitted in with the, you know, the music side, but really I'm focused more on the music now, because I know that, I think having taken time out to do films and to do a play, I've done a couple of plays and TV, I actually know the commitment involved.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a singer and you're successful, the you assume that you can go in at the same level, and you can't. But the commitment to a film can be, you know, months. It can be a few weeks, months. TV can be, it's very quick. A play, I think, is the ultimate. I think plays are wonderful.
Well, because you know how long the season is, and you know what your hours are.
But it's 3 months, and you've got to, you know, have a rehearsal period. So you really have you have more time to get stuck into the material. But again, there's a discipline of finding something new every night and being very consistent.
Of course.
Hardest thing is being consistent, I think. That's the thing you've got to do.
Right, we're going to have one more tune that you've chosen, and then you're going to do a spoken word session for us. And you've picked Björk, Violently Happy.
Oh, yeah. I love Björk, because you can't describe Björk, really. She's very unique, and her voice is beautiful, and I just adore her, and I think her videos were extraordinary too. The video for this one was great. It's just this sort of locked off Mondino directed shot of her with this doll, just very, very strange. But she's got the kind of just absolutely unique voice. No one sings like Björk. Nobody. No one in history. No one ever will. So I thought I'd choose her.
Sing.
Christmas track from Björk, Violently Happy, and my guest is Adam Antebat, to do a spoken word session for us. And, well, Dirk Bogard.
Dirk Bogard. Yeah, I've chosen a piece from Dirk Bogard's, I think it was the last part of his many autobiographies, which are wonderful. It's called Cleared for Takeoff. And the section I've chosen is him describing how he got into character to play this von Asenbach character for Death in Venice.
Because he's a very talented Dirk Bogard. He's a writer.
Wonderful writer, yeah.
An actor, an artist. Mm. And did you have any the good fortune to meet him?
Yeah, I went to a shop down in near Regent Street. And near Piccadilly, and I went for a signing. He was signing his Postillion Struck by Lightning, I believe. I think it was his first autobiography. And I went in there in a leather jacket and a punk rocker, and he was sitting there, and he just had to sit perfectly, Prince of Wales tie on, and he's a lovely blazer and immaculate, Who's it for? I said, Adam. Very nice. And he just looked great. He just looked perfect. In fact, my bass player Andy Warren was in the queue
really?
As well. Yeah, so I actually had the pleasure of meeting him. And then I saw him shortly before he died do something at the National Film Theatre. He did a lecture. And he was great then. He was so funny. He was just so...
Don't give us an example.
So on it. There's this young lady, this lady Madonna. I got a phone call from a young lady Madonna, and she phoned me up and she said, "Dirk, I'm doing a book called Sex, and I was wondering if you'd like to be in it with me." And I said, "I believe she's seen my film, The Night Porter. I think she thought I did that for a living." When people ask him questions, so I speak up. Speak up. What do you say? He was brilliant. He was so good. But it was just very, very funny man as well. But just a brilliant writer.
Is he English? Was he born in England?
His parents were Dutch.
Yeah.
Van den Bogard. And he changed it. It was Derek van den Bogard.
Derek Niven. Right,
but Dirk. He changed it to Dirk.
Yeah.
Because it was shorter and briefer. But jolly, he's a great writer. It's almost like a sort of therapy reading his books. They're so beautifully written.
Well, do you want to read that passage for us?
Yes, I will. Here we go. I sat in the garden in a loggia by the water, all on my own, nursing myself in the fat eiderdown of von Asenbach and being him. I was coming more and more so to understand him as the days progressed, understanding him and, what was far more important, trying to make him comprehensible for an audience. Who, for heaven's sake, is going to give a fig for a prissy, fastidious, ugly, lonely old German composer? That was my job, wrapped in a eiderdown, or perhaps ectoplasm is more of an apt word, of the man. I soon moved and even spoke like him. Unnerving if you didn't know what was happening, interesting to a degree if you did. Most did, so I was comforted. The tiny details I had garnered from my encounter with the woman in the bar terminus were put to good use, sitting in the little loggia with just a gentle slap of the lagoon along the tiny strip of sand beyond the filigree iron gate, the wheeling swift swooping like commas high above the dome of the Rentadore, and the distant bells of the city drifting across the lagoon from Venice, all mixed with the bumble of polyheaven bees nudging into the white and pink discs of hollyhocks beside me, ease stressed, and left my mind completely open, unencumbered by any other thoughts, so that I was able to make myself wholly available for the arrival of my prissy playmate. I grew to hate as well as pity him, and I was completely possessed by him. I hated who he was. His intelligence terrified me. It was not mine. I was simply the vessel used to carry him into life. I had no choice but to let him dictate the way we went. I was intellectually incapable of fighting him. It was the oddest, most fearful experience. I turned into someone else altogether. According to the diaries, I was at the times always polite, distant, forgetful, on another plane. I ate only boiled fish, usually the little sole you could get from the lagoon, with two boiled potatoes, no butter, no vegetables, a chunk of bread, and on occasion a bit of cheese. I ate the same every day. How I managed, I who delight in food, I no longer remember. Dinner was a bowl of pasta or a plate of thinly cut ham, again with a boiled potato.
Wow, fantastic. What a great passage that is. And I mean, he's somebody I've always revered as an actor. Mm. I haven't read any of the autobiographies, so I'm going to have to go and do that.
They're magical. He's just magical. It's my favourite.
And thank you. And I mean, how do you decide what to read? It must be difficult.
I think we were discussing when I heard, because it's very unusual to, it's very interesting to be asked to read anything, however badly. And you think, oh yeah, there's one or two writers that I think I could definitely read a passage of that. And you read along and it's, no. It's either swearing or it's too heavy or it's, you know. And one of my favourite writers is a Southern Gothic writer called Harry Cruise, and his stuff is, you've got to read it in the accent.
Mm.
You have to read it. Or Dylan Thomas, you'd have to sort of read it in the accent.
Mm.
So, Dirk was someone that his autobiographies are wonderful, beautifully written.
Well, thank you for doing that, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And no, it's been lovely to see you, and congratulations, as I say, on the album. Shrink, if you don't mind, I'd like to play that.
And oh, thank you.
Is it obvious what's it about?
I think anybody that's been in therapy will know what it's about. It begs the question, why do psychiatrists get paid for an hour when they only do 50 minutes?
Mm. You're doing all the talking.
Yeah. But it's quite useful, but it's just an experience.
Good one, nice one. Adamant, thank you very much indeed.
A fist in the skull. What's up?
And truly, every track on that album is a surprise. Adamant is the Blue Black Hussar in Marin, the Gunner's Daughter. Can you do me a big favour?
I certainly can.
Right. My girl Caroline loves Adam so much. I took her to see him when he played Fat Sam's in Dundee. A great show, man. Please get him to say hello to her. It would make her life. She's his biggest fan. Her name is Caroline Kidd in Dundee from her chap, Phil. So, Caroline Kidd.
Okay. Okay, Caroline Kidd, hello to you. I'm glad you enjoy Fat Sam's, because I did too. Happy New Year to you, and I'll see you this year sometime.
Brilliant. And I'll come to see you at the Roundhouse.
Okay, thank you.
I'm looking forward to that. Thank you very, very much indeed. And yes, Adamant. And don't forget, you can get in touch with the programme. You can text 88291, and you can always email, and that's janice.long@bbc.co.uk. And we are available on Twitter. And who is our next spoken word session? It's Elizabeth McGovern.
Oh.
The actress. And she's going to be coming in Tuesday into Wednesday.
And she's a singer too, isn't she?
She's got a band, hasn't she?
Yeah, plays a guitar.
Yeah, she does. It's a kind of countryish sound going on. And she's got somebody from Downton Abbey, because she's in that.
Okay.
Doing vocals on the album,
really?
As well. Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can expect a much better reading from her. listen to a professional.
You were great. You were great. Thank you very much indeed. And this is BBC Radio 2, online, on digital radio, and on 88 to 91 FM.